Wisconsin Department of Justice has had a very busy year, which is why I'm so glad Attorney General Brad Schimler has come in to talk about a year in review. General, thanks. Welcome back to Wisconsin Eye.
Thank you, Steve.
I want to talk about something that just the most recent, timely thing. One of the elements of news is timeliness. Have you ever been fired before? DPI superintendent.
Well, when I was a teenager, I got fired from a burger joint job, yeah.
Okay, but last week you saw the press release from the DPI superintendent, Mr. Evers.
Yeah.
I am firing the Department of Justice. Your reaction?
I think he's made this a little melodramatic. Even though the lawsuit says, names him as the defendant is the state of Wisconsin, and it is my job to defend the state and to defend state law, and the governor asked me to step in and represent the state on this. So that's my job, and we've told Superintendent Evers that we will actually support any motion he makes to come in and have his position represented by counsel of his choosing. So
you will.
We sent him a letter last week telling them that, and we're supportive of that. We understand that the Supreme Court needs to hear all of the arguments, and we disagree with him on his position. I mean, his position is that the state law doesn't apply to him because he's an independently elected official.
A constitutional officer.
Yeah, and so am I. And I, you know, the legislature decides what my budget looks like, and I think with that they can put some strings on what I do to spend it and things. So I have the same position relative to him, and I think they can put restrictions on all aspects of government. The legislature is the ultimate say as to what the law is.
Is this a kind of a Groundhog Day lawsuit? Hasn't this been litigated and decided by the court before?
In some aspects, yes. And so the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty has filed this lawsuit, and we're going to have some of the very same arguments and some of the same questions, yes.
Well, parse this for me, because DOJ's official position is that DPI is violating the RAINS Act?
Our position is that the RAINS Act can constitutionally be applied to the DPI when it creates regulations and rules, yes.
What happens next? The motion before the Supreme Court filed by Mr. Evers' lawyers asking them who should be his counsel. Do I have that right, General?
Yes, I think he's already lined up who's going to represent him, but yeah.
Okay, and the position of DOJ is?
We'll be supportive that he be able to participate as an intervener in the case.
Is he making this a major issue? He's a candidate for governor?
I think so. I think it's a little melodramatic. He and I get along very well, and we represent DPI in many different circumstances. So we're fine. It's a little bit of the politics.
Okay. Let's talk to the overriding issue that you spend so much energy on this year. How did we do with the war on opiate addiction, heroin addiction, with fentanyl this year? Did we make progress or not so much?
Well, I'm going to say one thing. I'm very uncomfortable calling it a war.
Thank you. Correct.
Because that implies we're using tools that we don't use.
Okay.
Frankly, in our struggle with this challenge, I'm spending a lot more time using weapons that don't involve guns or handcuffs. We're spending a lot more effort on prevention and treatment. We recognize that, and we are, believe me, we are arresting people. But we're focusing a lot more low-level drug users and people committing property crimes to support their habits. We're focusing a lot more on getting those people into treatment programs. Treatment and diversion courts now exist in about 50 of the counties in the state, and I think 7 of our tribes. That's great news that this continues to grow. When people talk about concerns about the burgeoning prison population in our state, the best thing we can do to address that prison overcrowding or prison overpopulation problem is to start addressing the underlying reasons why the person got involved in criminal activity in the first place. And treatment courts address those substance abuse disorders, mental illness issues. So we start addressing those, and we can then expect that these people can return to being contributing members of the community. We finally learned that if you just lock them up and expect they're going to come out and their problems will be behind them, you're going to be wrong. We finally have figured this out as a criminal justice system. So that's good news. So we've seen some very good progress. Now, we knew that the number of deaths was likely to continue to increase,
which
and they
sense.
Have.
Yes.
In for several reasons. Part of it is that we're seeing more powerful drugs out on the street. Fentanyl has as just becoming more and more prevalent in the heroin that's for sale out there. And fentanyl is so powerful and so addictive and so deadly. But we knew that the first thing we have to do is address the gateway drug. And the gateway drug to heroin are the prescription painkillers. And we've made some great progress with that. You know, our drug take-back programs continue to bring in huge numbers of unused medications. Nationwide, we continue to be in the top three states. Every time there are the national drug take-back days, only California and Texas have ever collected more than us, and they barely collect more than us. We're over 330,000 pounds of unused medications in 3 years. That's 17 semi-trucks full of these medications that are not out there for diversion and abuse and are not being dumped into our water table. They're safely destroyed. Now, we've had our Dose of Reality awareness campaign. It's hard to measure how well an awareness campaign works sometimes, but we can't collect 330,000 pounds of unused medications unless the average citizen in Wisconsin is getting this message and cleaning out their medicine cabinet and getting these things safely destroyed. The last couple drug take-back days, the nationwide ones, Wisconsin has been number one in the nation for the number of law enforcement agencies participating in the drug take-back events. That also is great news because it says law enforcement's getting the dose of reality that this is important to make their communities safe, and they're engaged. There are more and more law enforcement officers are carrying Narcan now and rushing to the scene to bring people back to life because they're recognizing the value in rescuing that person and getting them another chance to get them in treatment.
Are medical professionals getting the message and prescribing less opioid prescriptions?
That's the other.
I thought I saw a press release from your agency this year that said just that.
That's the other
significant
really,
or minor drop?
Significant. That's the other really good piece of news in this is from 2015 to 2016, the medical community in Wisconsin reduced its prescribing by, and I don't remember, it was somewhere in the teens, reduced their prescribing of opioids, and no law made them do that. And that was before our new mandatory prescription drug monitoring program, which we know is going to result in even greater reductions in prescribing of opioids. So the good news is they're getting the message. And by bringing the medical community to the table in Wisconsin, by creating that coalition that we did something that I don't know if any other state is doing. Because of that, our medical examining board has created new prescribing guidelines that are more aggressive than what the CDC proposed as a nationwide guideline, and there was hardly a complaint about it. Our medical community in Wisconsin testified in favor of a mandatory prescription drug monitoring program. No profession goes to government and says, we want you to give more mandated rules on us, but they recognize the importance of the role they play in getting us out of this epidemic, and they become major partners. The Pharmacy Society and DOJ collaborated earlier this year and created a pharmacy robbery prevention training program that links up law enforcement and pharmacies and helps them to learn how to make themselves less likely to be a victim of a pharmacy robbery, but also how to keep their staff and their customers safe if a robbery does occur, and how to be good witnesses after the fact so we can catch the person who did it. That was a great collaboration. We have also collaborated, of course, with Wisconsin Eye and created the tremendous program for high school and junior high kids.
It's on our website.
Yes.
Go ahead.
With the truth about addiction. Yes. And that's the best thing we can do with young people. When we've talked to young people and asked them, what can we do to help get the message? They said, you just tell us the truth and let us make decisions. And this is a great program that is not just a video, but also has materials to help teachers take this to the next level and talk to their students.
Do you support the lawsuits being filed by individual counties against Big Pharma? But your critics say, why hasn't DOJ filed those suits?
My critics don't understand the reality of what's happening. We have something far more powerful than a lawsuit filed by several counties with a plaintiff law firm representing them. We have 41 state attorneys general who are joined together in a coalition in a multi-state investigation. That's something that pharmaceutical companies and distributors cannot ignore. We have the ability through this multi-state coalition to issue civil investigatory demands, which are basically the discovery process that you'd have in a lawsuit. So we're already collecting the materials, the records. We're we're on the deposition process, all of those things that you'd have to normally file a lawsuit to do. But because we haven't filed the lawsuit, we're still at the table talking about, is there a way we can work together to resolve this?
Well, do you anticipate at some point a settlement with Big Pharma similar to the settlement with Big Tobacco a decade and a half ago, maybe 20 years ago?
It's way too soon to say.
But are you hopeful?
I am hopeful, and that's why we're working hard on it. And that's what the 41 states working together are doing on this. If we can make that work, maybe we can be looking at having some partnership with the companies soon. Estimates for the lawsuits, if it goes the litigation route, estimates are you're looking at 8 to 12 years. And if we haven't solved if we haven't done something to make a dramatic impact on this opiate epidemic by 8 years from now, half our state's going to be dead. We have to fix this now.
What blame do you assess, having worked on this issue for so long and so hard, to Big Pharma? What do they owe local governments and state governments paying for the medical care costs and police and emergency agencies?
Right.
How much blame do you assess?
Well, it's a good question, because it isn't a matter of having all the blame. Things kind of hit in a perfect storm 15 to 20 years ago nationwide, when the federal government decreed that you have a right to be free from pain and started mandating that doctors and hospital systems utilize the pain scale and linked Medicaid reimbursement rates to patient satisfaction surveys, linked hospital incentive rates to patient satisfaction surveys. They created this terrible conflict of interest where doctors and hospitals are only going to get paid if their patients are satisfied. And some of those questions asked, how did they do on addressing your pain? And now doctors do piecework. They're allotted eight minutes with a patient or something like that. And so the quickest thing to do sometimes, send them home with a prescription. So yes, the pharmaceutical companies were making representations that this was the silver bullet to people's pain problems, and they're not addictive and they're not dangerous, and those things turned out to be false. We did sue, in Wisconsin included, sued Purdue Pharma a decade ago for those representations. Wisconsin's statute of limitations for lawsuits is 3 years. It's because they've been sued before, and because this awareness has been growing, the companies have been much more careful in their marketing practices in the last 3 years. It is not the same lawsuit landscape that existed 10 years or 15 years ago.
With Big Tobacco.
So it's a much bigger question. And you also have, with tobacco, if the tobacco company says in an ad that puts a Joe Camel or the Marlboro Man or whatever, and they make it attractive to young people to go out and smoke because you'll be cool, and they say that our product is not addictive, and then they manipulate the nicotine levels, all that stuff happens. The public goes directly to the convenience store and buys a pack of cigarettes.
Which is a legal product. You do not need a script to do it.
Right. With these prescription painkillers, you also have the manufacturer, the distributor, the doctor, the pharmacist, and then this role that the government played in all of it. It is very difficult to say who's most to blame for all this. I think there's an awful lot of blame to go around. So that's why we focused our efforts instead on getting a solution and getting partnerships toward that solution. And that's where we've been so successful in Wisconsin. So much successful that Pew Charitable Trusts has come to Wisconsin and told us, we want to make you a national model. They've been interviewing all the people that are involved in searching for solutions here, including the legislature, the governor, the courts. We're all hands on deck here. And they want to invest in helping make our programs work, and they want to invest in measuring the success of our program so we know what is working best and what's not. I think that says this best of all, is when Pew Charitable Trusts comes in and says, we want to make you a national model.
When I look at this year, DOJ has filed with the Supreme Court and the federal courts on it may be a record number of times, from the new releases over California's egg safety rules, and Indiana law banning abortions based on disability, gender, and race, and a separate abortion issue, the Unborn Child Protection Act, overturning President Obama's Clean Clean Power Act, the waters of the U.S., redistricting. Are DOJ's priorities the same as the Trump administration?
Not in all ways, no. There are some things I don't agree with, but you know, in general, there's been a difference between the I was AG during the last 2 years of President Obama's administration. During the time when he promised he was going to use his pen and his phone to get around Congress, and he did. And because of that, we had standing frequently as a state to challenge what he was doing or what his regulatory agencies were doing. We joined the lawsuits when Wisconsin has an interest. Like when you talked about the lawsuit that Missouri has against California over egg standards.
Right. There's 20 other states that joined that. Excuse me.
Yes. The reason we joined it is because Wisconsin is a huge agricultural producer. And what's happened, because of the size of California's piece of the national market, the size of their economy, Wisconsin, Missouri, Iowa, all these Midwestern states send agricultural products to California. And they've done this before, where they set standards that impact how we make products, we produce agricultural products in our states. They're violating federal law because Congress passed in 1970 the Egg Products Inspection Act, which provides that the national U.S. Department of Agriculture makes determinations as to standards for production of eggs. So California, when they set their own, they impact consumers in Wisconsin, they impact farmers in Wisconsin. So from my perspective, and this won't be the only lawsuit of its kind, there's a similar lawsuit. Massachusetts has some agricultural standards that Indiana is looking at challenging, and I wouldn't be surprised that Wisconsin ends up joining that as well. We want the United States Supreme Court to make clear that when it comes to interstate commerce, the Congress does have authority to act on that, and they have acted.
And they have. Make a prediction. Are we going to win the redistricting lawsuit?
Yes, and I think we've talked about this before, and really there are a number of reasons. First off, and probably most significant, is that the plaintiffs have not provided the United States Supreme Court with a neutral standard that can be applied across all 50 states and all of the electoral districts across the country. And if they don't do that, the court's made clear, if you don't give a standard we can apply, this is non-justiciable from the perspective of the Supreme Court. So because of that, we just don't think. And besides, they've said before, this is something for the political branches. And if we engage in this, and boy, during the questioning by Chief Justice Roberts, he made very clear his concerns about this, that if we enter into this, how do we get out? Yeah. What election don't we decide?
Every reapportionment map has got to go before the federal court. You also got involved. You've urged the Supreme Court to approve prayer at public government meetings led by those officials. Right. And this all, your critics, some Democrats say you've become a legal warrior for the conservative, the far right causes. Your response?
If officials wish to pray before a legislative session, that's clearly acceptable under our Constitution. Anyone who studies the history of our founding fathers and their creation of our Constitution will find it replete with examples of prayer. And as a matter of fact, it was Benjamin Franklin who proposed that they institute the chaplain for the United States Congress because he reflected on the difficulty they were having during the Constitutional Convention in reaching consensus on important issues. And he challenged, you know, during the war, we all prayed every day together for our survival and for the birth of this nation. And how is it now that we can expect that we could craft the document that's going to guide this nation into the future without also praying to the Father of Lights? It's clear that authority exists, and it's an easy case for me to get involved in from that perspective, and no one is forced to pray.
DOJ intervened in two federal abortion-related cases. Would you personally like to see Roe versus Wade overturned, General?
Personally, yes. I am a pro-life person. As you may know, I have two adopted daughters who are examples of the courage of two 18-year-old young women who chose to give their daughter's life and give my wife and I a family that we couldn't have on our own. So I'm a pro-life person, but this is a question of law. I'm not imposing my personal will on the state on this. One of the two laws that was struck down in Indiana is something that's pending in our legislature right now, mm-hmm. which deals with the disposal of fetal remains. But also, when you look at the other law that was struck down that would permit someone to decide to have an abortion, openly decide to have an abortion based on the gender,
disability,
based on the race, yes. or the potential for that child having a disability, that kind of discrimination, we don't permit that in any other place. Why then would we permit it when you're taking that life before birth? Now, the other reason to get involved is the federal district judge in the Southern District of Indiana got it wrong. That judge concluded that pre-viability, the states can't put any restrictions on abortion, that it's wide open, and that's not correct. The United States Supreme Court has approved the states putting restrictions when they're reasonable. So we're challenging
some limits in the second and third trimester. Excuse me for interrupting.
Yes.
That? Okay.
And even in the first trimester, that there are limits, such as when the Supreme Court approved parental consent guidelines, with some exceptions to that. But they said the state can reasonably put those kind of restrictions on. And so when the judge just said it's inviolate, you can't do anything to restrict abortion during that time, the court's wrong. And as this goes up to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, that's our Federal Circuit Court of Appeals, that their decision will have impact on Wisconsin and what decisions our legislature can make to make sure abortions are safe in Wisconsin.
It's also timely because it was argued today before the U.S. Supreme Court. Should a Denver baker have a right to not make a wedding cake for a same-sex couple?
My belief is that the First Amendment provides that right to Jack Phillips, that while the courts made clear that same-sex couples have the right to have their marriage recognized, this is a different question, because now you're talking about, can they take their right to be married and now infringe on the legitimate religious liberty beliefs or rights of a person who is an artist? This isn't going down to the corner grocery store and buying a box of ding-dongs. This is somebody who creates art. And it's a matter that is important to Wisconsin, because we did have a case here that didn't get any further than the Dane County Circuit Court, but we had a case here with a photographer who took the same position, that my religious beliefs prevent me from being involved in a same-sex marriage. The strongest obligation I have is to protect the First Amendment rights of people, because our government in America fails if the First Amendment fails.
As Attorney General, you're part of the debate over national security. Just generally, do you support the President's travel ban, which the Supreme Court just issued a stay over yesterday, sir?
Well, more importantly, I support the position that the President has that authority. And that's the issue. I don't want to get into the policy, because I'm not an immigration expert. I'm not a national security expert. But on the law, I do think the President's right, that the authority is vested in him to make those decisions.
Another national security issue. Do we need a wall with Mexico, General?
I don't know about a wall, but we do need to secure that border, because we started out our conversation talking about the drug epidemic. And it goes beyond just opiates. It's also methamphetamine flowing across that border, which will be the next major problem that Wisconsin faces in a drug epidemic. And if we don't secure that border, we will continue to have those drugs flowing into America, and we will have the money and the guns flowing back into Mexico, which is destroying their nation too, because the drug cartels are so rich and so powerful and so well-armed that they're controlling local communities. And it's causing huge disruption to Mexico. We need to secure that border. And my position on immigration is we need to recognize that immigrants are an important part of our nation, and we need to let them in legally. Sign the guest book on the way in. Come here and work, support your families, and live the American dream, where you make your children's lives more successful than yours through your hard work.
Should that include a path to citizenship?
I do think so, yes.
You do think so. The whole debate over sexual harassment, is there any upside that you see as a law officer?
It's been very uncomfortable witnessing the brave individuals who've been coming forward to report that people in power have committed wrongful acts against them sexually, and you can watch each time they talk about it on a TV show or something, you can see the pain. It doesn't go away. It doesn't get easier for them. It's painful to watch that, but there's something very encouraging in this, because as American society's reacted to it, I think traditionally we would have expected the questions about what were you wearing? Why did you go to their apartment? Why were you present in this place with them? Why were you drinking? Why were you using drugs? Whatever thing they may have been doing. And instead, we're seeing in America's reaction to this, they're looking at the offenders, and sometimes very powerful people, and looking at them and saying, what's wrong with you? What gave you the right to treat somebody the way you treated them? That's great to see. And, you know, especially when you look at young people growing up who watch the they monitor the entertainment stuff. This is a story they're seeing. And when they're seeing people coming forward on sexual assault and sexual harassment and demanding that their rights be respected, and America in general is respecting that, I think that's going to make us better and stronger, because if we cannot hold offenders accountable, if victims aren't willing to come forward.
You opened an Office of Open Government.
Yeah.
Do you think sexual harassment complaints in the legislative branch should be made public? Because the leaders say no.
I represent them. If challenges are made, I'll end up representing them. And I do think that they're on good legal standing. Our public records law does allow them to exercise that balancing test. And you've got a very important interest on one side, mm-hmm. and that is the public being able to see what their government officials are doing. And that's very important. On the other side, you also have the rights of those victims to their privacy. And in most cases, when someone comes forward, they come forward to human resources. And when they come there, the expectation is what I'm reporting is not going to be released publicly, that my privacy is going to be respected. If they don't have that understanding, aren't a lot of them not ever going to come forward, and we won't ever be able to investigate and take the disciplinary action that's appropriate? So when they strike that balancing test, what they're doing is lawful, and frankly, I think it's in their best interest. We cannot disempower victims of abuse or assault, because when we do that, they will not come forward anymore.
What about possibly redacting the names of the victims, General?
Those possibilities exist. The problem is, especially with these legislative offices, they're so small. If you start redacting the names of the victim, you still leave the nature of the claim, it's going to be very easy for someone to figure out who it is.
Some of these legislators only have one or two staffers.
Yep.
I see what you mean. Okay, we're almost out of time, but I do want to give you a chance to respond to two. Next year is an election year, if you
it
hadn't
is.
Heard.
I'm
and,
aware.
You're aware. The Democrat running against you has give you a chance to respond to two things. Wisconsin has a backlog of thousands of DNA kits awaiting testing for more than 2 months. Your response?
Well, you know that my debate is that this isn't a backlog. It's an accumulation. They've been accumulating for over 20 years. And no one asked the crime lab to test them until just recently. And we're going to resolve that problem that accumulated for over 20 years. We're going to resolve it in less than 3 years. We'll have all those kits tested. That's a positive solution. And we're doing something that what we're doing has been recognized by the Obama administration Department of Justice as the gold standard.
In the second response to your Democratic critic, there's been few lawsuits against polluters. So the environment is in worse shape than when you took office. Just a response?
We're actually doing things that are much better for Wisconsin. When you look at a company up in Wausau that made shingles, that had a brief lapse in their containment systems, they came forward and volunteered to the DNR that we had this lapse. Maybe we would have caught it down the road, maybe not. But traditionally, we would have charged them for that and gotten a $40,000 forfeiture, I think is what someone proposed we should have gotten. Instead, because they self-reported, we worked with them to make sh- to have make sure they put in a process that makes sure you don't have this problem again. They gave us access for 5 years beyond what we normally would have under the law for inspectors to go in and look at that equipment and make sure they're not having these lapses. And that company became a green tier company, something we could not have forced them to do. All of that, and they kept those jobs in Wisconsin. That's the right way to go forward.
And then the final question, apart from getting reelected, what's DOJ's top priority for 2018?
Well, opiates are going to continue to be our top priority. We're also going to be focusing on working with our elder abuse task force. This is a problem that's boiling up.
Aging Wisconsin.
Yes, and we want to make sure that we aren't chasing after a problem, that we're out in front of the problem. Methamphetamine, expect to hear more about that. Expect to hear me talk more about making sure our DA's offices have the resources and the help they need to make sure they can do their jobs well, because they're our most important public safety partners. Expect us to hear us working more and more on the human trafficking issue in Wisconsin. A lot of things. Expect more news about that 41-state coalition that's looking at the opiate manufacturers.
Okay. Great. Attorney General Brad Schimmel, thanks for the year in review discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you.